Welcome to Plato's Projects with James Graff, where we pursue Plato's projects of developing adequate theories of the good and the true in conversation with academic philosophy, but also with academia in general. Socrates believed that no one is deprived of knowledge willingly. We all want not merely to believe, but also to know. But what is it that we seek to know? Obviously, it is the truth that we seek to know. For whatever our goals, knowledge helps us attain them. But what is knowledge? What, for that matter, is truth? For over 2,300 years, philosophy has been seeking answers to these questions. Philosophers who study these questions are called epistemologists, after the Greek word episteme, knowledge, and their philosophical discipline is epistemology. So, is it possible to answer humanity's most basic questions about the nature of knowledge and how to get it? In this first 10-episode series, I share the 10 chapters of my own book, Knowledge by Acceptance, 2nd edition. This book presents a novel analysis of knowledge, a list of conditions that, when met, indicate that a person knows something rather than merely believing it. The no unacceptable element analysis of knowledge it proposes overcomes the problems that have plagued such theories to date, known as the Gettier problems. But it goes beyond this solution to make the analysis of knowledge truly practical for everyday use by human beings, rather than merely usable within idealized thought experiments in which the truth of the matter has been predetermined. Owing to time constraints, I have used a synthesized voice, the best I have ever found, in fact, to read the text. This best voice happens to be female. In addition, I have not been able to shape the text in detail as I normally would. As a result, it will sometimes read a word incorrectly. If you hear a word that doesn't sound quite right, please imagine the word on the written page to figure out what was written. Of course, the best thing to do to truly understand everything is to buy the book, which is available on Amazon in ebook and paperback formats. More information about the book and about myself can be found on my website, jamesgraff.org, and that's Graff spelled G-R-A-F. I hope you enjoy the reading.
Knowledge by Acceptance, 2nd edition. By James Graff. Copyright 2019 James Graff. All rights reserved. Chapter 10, Finalizing Our Analysis of Knowledge. 10.1 Creating New. So, we have our answer to our question, the evidential position that makes knowledge attribution sufficiently accountable to absolute truth so as to align with BV3 of the basic view. This leads us to add another criterion to our analysis of knowledge. Now, if I were to be consistent with my previous practice, I would name this analysis New C, for No Unacceptable Element Theory, version C. But I'm feeling pretty good about this particular version, so I'm going to take a risk and call it simply New for No Unacceptable Element Theory, as if it were the final version we'll be discussing, and we won't require any further revisions. Let's see if I later regret this. So, let's add that sixth condition to create the new analysis of knowledge. New. S knows P equals DF. According to O's evidence. 1. S believes P, the subject's belief condition. 2. S's belief in P is justified, according to S's evidence. The subject's justification condition. 3. S's justification contains no unacceptable element, be it a false premise, or a relied upon process, or method that is in fact unreliable in the present context. The acceptability condition. 4. O believes P, the observer's belief condition. 5. O's belief in P is justified. The observer's justification condition. 6. O's relevant evidence incorporates the relevant evidence from any requisite and sufficient set of possible empirical social knowledge-building institutions, including sciences and journalistic institutions, all of them mature concerning the topic in question. The observer's evidence validation condition. The new sixth condition incorporates the requirement that the observer's evidence match the grade of the mature science observer, and thus the grade required by the basic view of knowledge. Now, it will be worthwhile to point out the order of news conditions, and how this order helps us to see how we have effectively now replaced the former truth condition with three conditions, not just two. 10.1.1 from truth condition to conditions 4, 5, and 6. Earlier in this book, when I chose to place the truth condition last in our original articulation of the traditional analysis of knowledge, I said it would make sense later. Here is where I deliver on that promise. If you'll notice, the first three conditions pertain to the subject's justified belief, and the last three to the observer's justified belief. This was deliberate. When I articulated the tack, I placed the truth condition last at position 3. When I added the acceptability condition to create new A, I kept the truth condition last, thus bumping it up to position 4. When I replaced the truth condition with the observer's belief and justification conditions to create new B, these truth condition replacements wound up again at the end of new B as the fourth and fifth conditions, respectively. Finally, when I added the observer's evidence validation condition as condition 6 to create new, I left the observer's belief and justification conditions at number 4 and 5, respectively. This was because now I had achieved my stylistic goal. All the conditions pertaining to the observer's justified belief were together at the end, and those pertaining to the subject's justified belief were together at the start. This elegant grouping will help both with explaining this analysis of knowledge to people, and with making it clear what we effectively have done with the former truth condition. Effectively, in our transitions first from new A to new B, and then from new B to new, we have replaced the truth condition with conditions 4, 5, and 6. In going from new A to new B, we tried to replace the truth condition with just the observer's belief and justification condition. But then we applied test 5, and were horrified to discover that we had made absolute truth no longer applicable to knowledge attribution, since new B said that any observer could attribute knowledge to a subject person, irrespective of the truth conducivness, or lack thereof, of the observer's evidence. In response, we added the sixth condition, to require that the observer's evidence be highly likely to be truth conducive. Thus, the last three conditions collectively end up requiring that the observer's belief be justified on the basis of evidence validated as highly unlikely to be defeasible by the sum total of any other theoretically possible evidence. Together, they exist to function in place of the truth condition by ensuring that the observer believes P is justified on the basis of his evidence in believing P, and that his evidence itself is highly unlikely to point toward a conclusion that diverges from the truth. Thus, the order of our conditions has helped us to see that we have replaced the truth condition with three conditions that pertain to the observer's justified belief, and of course the evidence that forms the basis for the observer's justification. 10.1.2 Clarifying the sixth condition. Finally, I anticipate that many will have certain questions about the meaning of the sixth condition. Allow me to address three such questions. First, does this analysis of knowledge require that the observer learn all of the evidence from the sciences and similar institutions, a clearly impossible task? Second, does new require this reference to social epistemic institutions on every question, even questions of everyday direct perception? And third, what do I mean by a sufficient set of such social epistemic institutions? Let's respond to each of these three questions in turn. Firstly, no, new does not require that the observer learn all of the evidence from sciences, journalistic institutions, etc., when these institutions could and do possess relevant evidence. It only requires that the observer learn the relevant outputs of such institutions. As we will discuss in Book 3, there are indeed situations in which it is rational for one to believe things on the basis of testimony, i.e., when epistemic trust is deserved, especially by an institution with strong self-correcting mechanisms. Thus, as long as the observer indeed was justified in believing that the witness, e.g. a scientific institution, was reliable, she would be justified in trusting the testimony, i.e. the evidential outputs of that witness as truth-conducive. An example will help. Kim believes a proposition P, i.e. that the planet Mercury orbits the Sun in less than 100 days. She is having lunch with Chuan, her friend. Chuan is deciding whether Kim's belief in P constitutes knowledge. His own evidence, that is, his memory about what he learned in high school, indicates to him that the orbital period of Mercury is around 125 days. Therefore, Chuan is currently inclined to say that Kim's belief does not constitute knowledge. Since the fourth and fifth conditions of Nu are not satisfied, Chuan does not believe P, since he is not justified in believing P on the basis of his evidence. But Chuan suddenly remembers that Nu has six conditions, not just five. So he looks up the Wikipedia page for Mercury on his smartphone, as I myself just did, in fact. It tells him that the orbital period of Mercury is 87.9691 days. Since he rightly, I think, trusts that this Wikipedia page reliably reflects the outputs of mature relevant sciences, Chuan incorporates this new evidence into his own body of evidence. This incorporation causes Chuan's previous memorial evidence about the matter to be defeated. Now he considers himself justified in believing P, that Mercury orbits the Sun in less than 100 days, and so he believes P. Now he is ready, on the basis of the six conditions of new theory, to make his judgment about Kim's belief in P. Kim's belief in P in fact does constitute knowledge, i.e. Kim knows P. Secondly, no, the new does not require that the observer incorporate the outputs of the evidence of reliable social epistemic institutions on every question. I will now posit that the observer does not need to make this reference to such social epistemic institutions on a question when two conditions are met. 1. This is a question about which the observer has very strong first-hand perceptual evidence, or memories of such first-hand perceptions, sufficient to conclude that, absent the observer being in a skeptical scenario, the sum total of other possible relevant evidence would not defeat the observer's justified belief and 2. The observer has no evidence that she is in a skeptical scenario. Again, an example will help. You are driving leisurely in the countryside with your young daughter. You, with your excellent eyesight, see what your mind immediately and unambiguously identifies as a barn. Your daughter points at it and says, "Barn." You tell her, "You're right, that is a barn." You attribute knowledge to her of the proposition, P, that object we pointed to was a barn. Since you don't have any indication that you are in a skeptical scenario, you conclude that you don't need any help from social epistemic institutions to conclude that was a barn, since eyesight from the road in such situations is normally more than sufficient to exclude other possibilities. Thus you conclude that all six of Nu's conditions are satisfied, including condition six. In this case, according to Nu, you correctly attribute knowledge of P to your daughter. However, when you get home, sitting alone after your daughter has gone to bed, you see on television a documentary about the county in which you had been driving, which you learn to be called Barn County. You learn that Barn County is in fact a skeptical scenario for such questions, since the residents have filled it with fake barns indistinguishable from the road from real barns. And you learn that the only real barn in Barn County was the one you happened to point to. But since your perceptual evidence was in fact insufficient to exclude other possibilities in the context of Barn County, you now conclude, on the basis of your now greater evidence, that in fact your past self's perceptual method of drawing conclusions about the identity of such objects was unreliable. Thus you conclude that condition 6 of Nu is in fact not met, since you now believe that in that context your past self needed the help of social reliable knowledge-building institutions, such as good documentary filmmaking. Thus you conclude that neither your past self nor your daughter knew that the object was a barn. In this case, you are playing the role of observer, judging whether the subject person, i.e. your past self, and your daughter's past self, knew the proposition in question. You also conclude that presently, you know that the object is a barn, but your daughter still does not, since she hasn't seen the documentary. Some will object that the sixth condition, understood this way, leaves knowledge relative in a problematic way. But I disagree. I think this means that Nu has exactly the right result, according to the basic view of knowledge. We all know that the legitimate knowledge attributions we make, and even that scientific experts make on areas of expertise, are fallible. On many topics at least, additional evidence can defeat the knowledge attribution, causing us to change our minds about whether the subject person knew the proposition in question. This is perfectly consistent with us still ensuring that absolute truth is relevant in such knowledge attributions. And this is the case for Nu. With Nu, the social need to have institutions that are constantly pursuing a state of perfect and complete evidence as a regulative ideal is incorporated in the sixth condition. Nu portrays a world in which any member of society can act as observer concerning any other member of society's belief in a proposition. You can observe your daughter and conclude she knows P. But I can observe you and conclude that you and her, in fact, do not know P, since I am aware of requisite and relevant social epistemic institution-based evidence of which you are unaware, that defeats your justification for P. Thus, the best chances for all of us to be making knowledge attributions of higher and higher grade is to work together, mutually accountable to mutually accessible evidence, or at least to the outputs of social epistemic institutions that directly work with mutually accessible evidence. I believe this precisely reflects our best, considered judgments about how knowledge actually works, i.e. it reflects the basic view of knowledge. So I think that condition 6 of Nu is getting things right. Third, what do I mean by a sufficient set of such social epistemic institutions? By this I mean that society is not missing a key institution that would be required to give us a very high probability that outputs of that collective set of institutions would not be defeated by the sum total of other possible, non-currently discovered evidence. For example, I am sure there are propositions that neuroscientists can now be said to know on the basis of evidence that is mature concerning that question. And of these propositions, I am sure we could identify some that can only be said to be known in this sense because of the concurrent maturity of a combination of disciplines, such as molecular biology, electrophysiology, and neuroimaging. The same can be said about current events. There are likely many questions concerning current events about which members of a society cannot possess knowledge unless the society possesses different relevant social epistemic institutions at maturity on those questions, such as truth-conducive daily news journalism, investigative journalism, and documentary filmmaking. Often, the different perspectives of multiple different disciplines are needed in order for science as a whole, or even society as a whole, to be in a state of epistemic maturity concerning a question. But now that we have clarified the meaning of the sixth condition, it is time to return to our due diligence to see whether Nu as a whole can withstand critique. Now it's time to apply our tests again to see if Nu can pass them all. 10.2 Testing Nu. To be thorough, let's apply all our tests to Nu. We begin thus with Test 1 and Test 2, which check whether Nu correctly denies the subject person knowledge in our two specific Gettier example scenarios. 10.2.1 Applying Test 1 and Test 2, Nogood Havet and Barn County. First, Test 1 is for the Nogood Havet Tesla example. Does Smith know that P, that someone in Smith's office owns a Tesla, according to Nu? In other words, does Smith satisfy all six of Nu's conditions? All conditions are of course assessed by you and I, the observer here, according to the evidence we possess. The first and second conditions are met, because Smith does believe P, and he is justified in believing P, based on his strong evidence that Nogood owns a Tesla. We'll skip condition 3, the acceptability condition, for a moment, as it's more complex. Conditions 4 and 5 are also met, because we, as the observers, do believe P, and are justified in believing P on the basis of our evidence, which indicates that while Nogood is faking his Tesla ownership, Havet does in fact own a Tesla, safely stored at home in his underground bunker. Condition 6 is also met, because in this case, we could say that there are no relevant social knowledge-building institutions whose evidence I need. I have first-hand experience with Nogut, and have it that is sufficient to make it highly likely that there is no other relevant evidence that would defeat my conclusion. So, going back to condition 3, here we find that this condition is not met. We find an element within Smith's justification that we cannot accept within a justification of our own, the implicit belief that Nogut owns a Tesla. Therefore, we conclude that Smith does not in fact know P. Smith does not know that someone in his office owns a Tesla. This means that New produces the correct answer, and so New passes test 1. Second, we apply test 2, which concerns the Barn County Gettier example. Does Henry know P, that the object Henry pointed to is a barn? Conditions 1 and 2 are met. Henry believes P and is justified in believing it, since eyesight from the road is usually sufficiently reliable to establish such conclusions, and Henry has no evidence that he's in a strange context where that reliability is compromised. Again, we skip condition 3 for a moment. Conditions 4 and 5 are also met, since we, the observer, also believe P, and are justified in believing P on the basis of our evidence. As you'll recall, our evidence includes having watched a documentary from reliable filmmakers that detailed in-person inspection of all barn-like objects in Barn County, conducted at the time of Henry's drive, through which the filmmakers showed that the barn Henry had pointed at was the only real barn in Barn County. As for condition 6, we find it satisfied, since documentary filmmaking of this kind can be a reliable social knowledge-building institution, and we as observers include this documentary in our own evidence and rely upon it for our justification. We're presuming that this documentary satisfies any standards one could devise for a reliable documentary. So far, all conditions are met. Again, when we return to condition 3, we find it not satisfied. We find an element in Henry's justification that we cannot accept within a justification of our own. Henry's justification relied upon eyesight from the road being a reliable means of ascertaining whether something is a barn, but we know that in Barn County this is not the case. Finding this unacceptable element within Henry's justification, we judge condition 3 to be not satisfied, and therefore we find that, according to new theory, Henry does not know P. Thus, New gets the correct answer for the Barn County example, that Henry does not know P. So, New passes test 2 as well. 10.2.2 applying test 3, Gettier example generating formula. Going on to test 3, we check whether it is possible to use the Gettier example generating formula to generate a Gettier example. Going to the first step in the formula, we attempt to generate a proposition that meets all the conditions of New that pertain to the subject person's belief and justification, conditions 1, 2, and 3, while being false while failing to meet the conditions that pertain to the observer's belief and justification, conditions 4, 5, and 6. Is it possible to perform this first step? To begin, we imagine a situation in which we have a relevant science-informed observer, O, determining whether to attribute knowledge to a subject, S. S justifiably believes a proposition, P, on the basis of his evidence, and O finds no element within the S's justification that O wouldn't accept in a justification of her own. Is it possible that P be false? That is it possible that O find it justified to believe the opposite of P, to believe that P is false, i.e. not P? Well, if O finds no element in the S's justification to be unacceptable within a justification of her own, then O must find herself able to construct a justification, fully acceptable to O in the light of her evidence, using only the elements in S's justification. If that is the case, then O must herself, on the basis of all her relevant evidence, find it justified to believe P. So it is impossible for O to find it justified to believe the opposite of P, not P. We find that it is impossible to successfully perform the first step in our Gettier example generating formula, using New. Therefore, New passes our test 3. So far so good. 10.2.3 applying test 4, avoiding truth determination. To apply test 4, we look at new to confirm that it avoids requiring that an actor perform truth determination. We find that new does not contain a truth condition. After all, we have replaced the truth condition with conditions 4, 5, and 6, which collectively require that the observer's belief be justified on the basis of evidence validated as highly unlikely to be defeasible by the sum total of any other theoretically possible evidence. So, new passes test 4. On we go. 10.2 point for applying test 5. Make absolute truth applicable to everyday knowledge attribution. Next we check whether new passes test 5. Does new make absolute truth applicable to everyday knowledge when used by the real human actors it calls for? New contains condition 6, which requires that the observer's justification be formed on the basis of evidence that includes all the evidence that any possible relevant sciences would produce, in a situation where all those sciences are mature, on the topics relevant to the question at hand. I am promising that when we explore the nature of justification and the nature of knowledge building within social contexts like science in subsequent books in this book series, we'll discover that humans can indeed make it more and more likely that beliefs formed on the basis of their evidence align with absolute truth by making those beliefs accountable to sense perception-based observation. I am promising we'll learn how it's possible to construct human social institutions, sciences, with real, flawed, human beings that, when continued for long periods of time, can indeed reach a point where humanity is justified in concluding the science is mature on that topic, that it is very unlikely that the sum total of any possible, not currently incorporated evidence would defeat the justification that P is true. Since you've been so kind as to, for the moment, play along and assume I'll deliver on those promises, you can conclude with me that, indeed, new sixth condition does make absolute truth applicable to real-world knowledge attribution. So, new does in fact pass test 5. On we go, with two tests left to go. Nervous? I sure am. If new can't pass these last two tests, I'll have to revise this book, calling new C, instead, and change my conclusion. I certainly hope new can pass these last two tests. 10.2.5 Applying test 6. Allow for differences between the subject and the observer's relevant evidence. After quite a journey, we come to our second test for practicality, which is test 6 overall. The question is, does new require that the subject and the observer's relevant evidence be identical? As I stated when I first articulated this test, the way to test for this is to try to generate an example in which the analysis of knowledge is satisfied, and in which the subject and the observer's relevant evidence and thus justifications are different. If we can devise even one such example, then the analysis of knowledge passes the test. So can we devise such an example? Luckily, it is possible for O to possess additional evidence that S doesn't possess, that, on balance, doesn't contradict any of the evidence in S's justification, but only provides additional support for the proposition. This situation presumes that the subject's justification was not 100% certain, but did pass the bar for the subject to conclude the proposition was true, and that the additional evidence that the observer possesses simply increases that level of certainty, above the bar for knowledge and closer to 100%. Let's illustrate this by interacting a bit further with Smith from our No Good Habit Tesla example. Imagine that after reading my story about Smith, you're appalled that he's living in this fog of misinformation. You learn that Smith lives in Fargo, North Dakota, and you take a trip there and find Smith, intent on enlightening him. At first, his eyes light up with a thirst for vengeance as he learns that Nogut was lying to him about owning that Tesla. But you manage to calm him down, and he forgives his silly coworker with the midlife crisis. Now, his eyes light up with curiosity as you introduce him to a coworker he seldom interacts with, Havit, and tell Smith that Havit is a closet Tesla owner. In fact, right then and there, Havit invites both of you over to his home to see his Tesla bunker. You both go and see the Tesla, as well as various other luxury goods safely awaiting the coming nuclear apocalypse, including a huge yacht, a private jet, and an albino tiger, all must-haves for those who must survive for long periods underground. You are also shown very strong evidence for Havitt's claim to own the Tesla. You are shown Havitt's ownership papers, and you all have a video conference with the town's well-known Tesla dealer, who confirms Havitt's ownership. This evidence is new to Smith, but not to you. We're still interested in whether Smith knows Proposition NT2, i.e. that someone in Smith's office owns a Tesla. Let's say that when a person's evidence makes it 95% probable that a proposition of this kind is true, that's enough to constitute knowledge. A probability of 95% is the bar for being justified in believing the proposition is true, and thus is the bar for knowledge. The evidence Havitt has just shown Smith makes it seem 96% probable to both you and Smith that Havitt owns a Tesla, i.e. it still could have been faked, but that seems very unlikely. Now, you ask Smith if he now believes the proposition NT2, someone in Smith's office owns a Tesla. Smith answers yes and cites the evidence you've both just seen for Havitt's Tesla ownership. Unlike before, you now judge that Smith knows NT2, since, from your perspective, Smith now has a justification for NT2 with no unacceptable element, one based on the evidence that you and Smith now share, evidence that is thus fully acceptable to you. But as you leave Smith, you chuckle evilly to yourself, you enlighten Smith, but not completely. What you withheld from him was the fact that a close and trustworthy friend of yours, Stampet, works at a government office in Fargo at which drivers obtain vehicle registrations, and actually approved the vehicle registration papers Havitt had shown the both of you. This additional evidence makes it seem even more probable to you that Havitt owns that Tesla, let's say, 98% probable. So even though you know NT2, that someone in Smith's office owns a Tesla, and you judge that Smith also knows NT2, you take pleasure in the fact that your justification for NT2 is just a bit stronger than Smith's. Ah, the sweet taste of superior knowledge, you shout out while boarding your plane. This leads to your being removed from the flight for further security screening, including a full body cavity search, but it's all worth it. This difference between your evidence and Smith's evidence proves that the no unacceptable element theory does not require that the subject and the observer's relevant evidence, and thus justification, be identical. The example proves that it is possible for all six conditions to be met, and yet for the subject's justification to be different from the observer's justification. So, the new analysis of knowledge has passed our second test for practicality, which is overall our test 6. Now we proceed to our third test for practicality, test 7, our final test overall, which is about ensuring it is practical to attribute knowledge to oneself. 10.2.6 Applying test 7, allow for self-knowledge attribution. Test 7 is the third of the three tests that concerns practicality, the others being test 4 and test 6. It confirms that the analysis of knowledge permits a person to attribute knowledge to himself, self-knowledge attribution, as I refer to it. So, does new allow for someone to attribute knowledge to himself, as the basic view does? Luckily for our new theory, pursuing this question leads us to a reinterpretation of our new list of conditions that allows for self-knowledge attribution. In doing so, we discover a special case of new that is simple and elegant. Let's wade in. 10.3 Third Person versus First Person Knowledge. So far, we've been discussing knowledge as though it can only be attributed by one person to another person. But according to the basic view of knowledge, individuals attribute knowledge to themselves every day without them being mistaken about that. If after feeling pain in my shoe I say to myself, I feel a pain in my foot as if there's a rock in my shoe, I'm probably not mistaken about attributing knowledge to myself concerning that proposition. The same goes for all manner of other propositions as well, concerning history, science, current events, mathematics, etc. Surely, we want to allow for the possibility that, sometimes at least, an attribution of knowledge to oneself is correct. That being possible, how can we account for such correct self-knowledge attributions using new theory, when it seems to require that two persons be involved, a subject person and an observer? In all our examples thus far concerning knowledge attribution decisions, an observer is deciding whether to attribute knowledge to a subject person. Often, to make this decision intuitively comprehensible, I have placed both you and I, the reader and writer, respectively, in the position of the observer. We were deciding whether to attribute knowledge to some third person, some subject person to whom we were referring by name, and in the grammatical third person, as she or he. You, the I in your life, from your first personal perspective, were deciding whether to attribute knowledge to Smith, in the no good habit car example, or to Henry, in the Barn County example, referring to these subject persons as he. The question you were considering was, does he know the proposition in question? Thus we see that analyses of knowledge are utilized by the observer, from their first personal perspective, to judge whether a proposition is known by a subject person. The reason we called them the subject is that this is the person that is the subject of the discussion. When we want to know whether Smith knows that someone in Smith's office owns a Tesla, the focus is on Smith. That focusing is done from the first personal perspective of the observer. And when that subject person is someone other than the observer, I will call this a third person knowledge attribution judgment since, from the perspective of the observer, the subject person is in the grammatical position of a third person, a he or she. That's why I will label such a knowledge attribution judgment a third person knowledge attribution judgment. As such, I also will call any analysis of knowledge that is set up for a scenario in which the subject person is someone other than the observer a third person analysis of knowledge. Its purpose is to attribute third person knowledge. It is set up to attribute knowledge to a third person relative to the observer. We can see that the knowledge attribution implied by our no unacceptable element formula is for third-person knowledge. But this does not imply that the formula cannot be used to attribute first-person knowledge. It does not mean that new cannot be used by the observer to attribute knowledge to herself. Attributing knowledge to oneself, first-person knowledge, is just a special case for the no unacceptable element theory. It is a case in which the observer and the subject are the same person. This means we can simplify our formula. In this special case of first-person knowledge attribution, the observer's evidence and the subject's evidence are the same. Some of the conditions in our no unacceptable element theory become redundant, being identical with other conditions, and we can remove them. To accomplish the transformation to the special first-person case, we begin with our new formula, which, as just stated, is set up for third-person knowledge attribution. In fact, let's begin that process by first clarifying the third-person nature of new by now calling it, for a moment, new P3, for no unacceptable element, third-person. New P3. S knows P equals DF. According to O's evidence. 1. S believes P, the subject's belief condition. 2. S's belief in P is justified, according to S's evidence. The subject's justification condition. 3. S's justification contains no unacceptable element, be it a false premise, or a relied-upon process, or method that is in fact unreliable in the present context. The acceptability condition. 4. O believes P, the observer's belief condition. 5. O's belief in P is justified. The observer's justification condition. 6. O's relevant evidence incorporates the relevant evidence from any requisite and sufficient set of possible empirical social knowledge-building institutions, including sciences and journalistic institutions, all of them mature concerning the topic in question. The observer's evidence validation condition. Next, because O is the same person as S, we replace all the O's with S's to create new P1, for no unacceptable element, first person, versiona. New P1A. S knows P equals DF. According to S's evidence. 1. S believes P, the subject's belief condition. 2. S's belief in P is justified, according to S's evidence. The subject's justification condition. 3. S's justification contains no unacceptable element, be it a false premise, or a relied-upon process, or method that is in fact unreliable in the present context. The acceptability condition dot. 4. S believes P, the observer's belief condition dot. 5. S's belief in P is justified. The observer's justification condition dot. 6. S's relevant evidence incorporates the relevant evidence from any requisite and sufficient set of possible empirical social knowledge-building institutions, including sciences and journalistic institutions, all of them mature concerning the topic in question. The observer's evidence validation condition dot. But now we notice some redundancies. The subjects and the observer's belief conditions are saying the same thing, i.e. conditions 1 and 4, respectively. So are the subjects and the observer's justification conditions, i.e. conditions 2 and 5, respectively. Next, we notice that the acceptability condition, i.e. condition 3, is actually redundant. If according to S's evidence, S's belief in P is justified, of course S sees no unacceptable element in her own justification. By definition, she's only justified in believing something if she sees no unacceptable element in her own reasoning. If she sees an unacceptable element there, such as a false premise, or a dependence upon an unreliable process, she isn't justified in believing P. We can eliminate all the redundant conditions, conditions 1, 2, and 3. This leaves us with a simple, three-condition formula for first-person knowledge. As this is our final version of the first-person formula, we call it new P1, for no unacceptable element, first-person. New P1. S knows P equals DF. According to S's evidence. 1. S believes P, the observer's belief condition dot. 2. S's belief in P is justified. The observer's justification condition dot. 3. S's relevant evidence incorporates the relevant evidence from any requisite and sufficient set of possible empirical social knowledge-building institutions, including sciences and journalistic institutions, all of them mature concerning the topic in question. The observer's evidence validation condition dot. These three conditions correspond to the last three conditions from new P3, i.e. those pertaining to the observer, as the labels I left at the end of each condition make clear. This is because with self-knowledge attribution, the subject is acting as her own observer. Thus, for first-person knowledge, when I believe P, I can also say that I know P, if and only if I am justified in believing P, based upon my evidence, and I am justified in believing that my evidence itself includes all relevant evidence from any requisite and sufficient, mature, possible, truth-conducive social knowledge-building institutions. 10.4 Resuming our testing of new. Now that we have shown how new can be reinterpreted to allow for self-knowledge attribution, we are ready to apply our final test to it, test 7. 10.4.1 Applying test 7, allowing for self-knowledge attribution. The previous section has shown us that new can be reinterpreted as a general formula for attributing knowledge, regardless of whether the observer and the subject are separate persons or are the same person. Since new is compatible with self-knowledge attribution, we are ready to conclude that it passes test 7. 10.5 Tests passed, adopting new, and thus knowledge by acceptance. At last we have an analysis of knowledge that passes all 7 of our tests. Could this be that a correct analysis of knowledge? What I can say is that it has passed all the tests I could imagine, after much research and careful consideration, all the tests I could find in the literature, plus a few that I could only find suggested there. I have exhausted all the critical resources I could muster, and the theory stands up to all of them, in a way that no other theory of the analysis of knowledge I could find does. It thus seems to me to be both better than any other theory I know of and sufficient for our purposes. No doubt, critical dialogue will reveal ways we can improve the wording of especially the last condition. But from all I can see, it seems that this theory is sufficiently strong, plausible, and at least in the near vicinity of the correct answer. Since that is my goal in this project, strong, plausible candidates for becoming consensus positions, I now take our goal to be achieved, though with some qualifications. News sufficiency is contingent upon my justifying the assumptions I made about the nature of justification and the possibility of improving evidence over time through social knowledge building. Thus, it is contingent upon me providing good answers to KQ2 and KQ5. Of course, since it was deliberately constructed to develop the basic view, our complete acceptance of it will also depend upon finding good answers to the challenges to the basic view, KQ6 to KQ8. I am confident that I, or others, can deliver on such answers. Nonetheless, what this leaves me able to say is that, on the provisional basis that such good answers will be forthcoming, I take new theory to be the kind of analysis of knowledge we were seeking in this book, and in that sense now adopt it. At this point, I am ready to provide a brief explanation as to why I titled this book, Knowledge by Acceptance. I liked this title because it fits in several ways with the new theory this book seems to provisionally vindicate. First, it seems to call to attention the two-actor framework the theory employs by employing a verb, to accept, that seems to require a human agent. It uses this verb in the context of describing the path to knowledge, the path by which knowledge comes to be. By this I meant the path by which knowledge is attributed. So I thought that this title could be a reminder of the notion that the knowledge attributer, the observer, is a real human being. And the reason I specifically chose the word acceptance is that new theory's de Gettierian condition, i.e. condition 3, is about ensuring there is no unacceptable element in the subject person's justification. Thus, the observer must fully accept the subject's justification for knowledge to be attributed. Of course, the sixth condition means that while the observer's acceptance of the subject person's justification is necessary for knowledge to be legitimately attributed, it is not sufficient. Only a specific kind of observer acceptance of the subject person's justification is the path by which knowledge is legitimately attributed, an acceptance that happens on the basis of evidence that the observer justifiably believes to be highly likely to be truth-conducive. So, new theory does present a path to knowledge by acceptance, but not by just any kind of acceptance. Rather, it presents a path to knowledge only by a certain kind of acceptance, i.e. one that happens from an evidential position that the observer has good reason to believe to be highly likely to be truth-conducive. That is why I called the book Knowledge by Acceptance, not Knowledge as Acceptance. So much for my explanation of the book's title. In a moment, we'll take a look around and see what our next steps are. But before we do that, I want to note a technical detail about New. 10.6 Should justifications also have a grade? Like all the analyses of knowledge that I have encountered, including the traditional analysis of knowledge, New assumes that, whenever the conditions are met, all justifications involved include only perfect reasoning from the person's evidence. In New, we have accounted for the practical fact that the observer's evidence is very often imperfect by stating that knowledge attributions are made relative to that evidence. We thus give knowledge a dimension that accounts for the quality and quantity of that evidence, the knowledge grade. Because of that, we have the sixth condition for knowledge, to get the grade of the evidence high enough to align it with the basic view of knowledge, where knowledge attributions are highly likely to align with those that would be made by the ideal human observer, without being guaranteed to be so. But we haven't accounted for the fact that, very often, real people's justifications from a given set of evidence are also imperfect. This applies to both subject persons and observers. Shall we also invent another dimension for knowledge, to account for the quality of the observer's justification? We would allow the observer to judge whether the subject's justification was of high enough quality, on the basis of the observer's justification. Do we also need a grade for the quality of the observer's justification? I'm saying we could further relativize knowledge by adding a second dimension, not of justification strength, objective probability that this evidence implies this conclusion, but of justification grade, the quality of the inferences as judged against absolute standards of reasoning. If we did this, evidence grade plus justification grade would combine to influence the knowledge grade. In this book collection, I choose not to go this extra step because our goal is not to give an account of bad reasoning. No, our goal is to account for the truth of the basic view, which includes only propositions we generally consider to be based on good, or even perfect, reasoning from good but not perfect evidence. And our goal is to provide normative guidance to people on how, in everyday life, they can actually exhibit good epistemic practice, be rational. For the purposes of this book series, I will assume that it is quite feasible to teach people to be perfect, or at least near perfect reasoners from a given set of evidence. Assuming I am right about this, it stands in stark contrast with the possibility of perfect evidence. It should be obvious that at least for many propositions about the world that the basic view says we know, our evidence cannot be expected to be perfect, or even near perfect. That is why I have designed NU to be able to attribute knowledge in cases in which the subject person and the observer's evidence is imperfect, i.e. it doesn't include all possible relevant evidence. That being the case, I don't think that, at this time, revising our analysis of knowledge to account for different grades of justification quality would provide enough benefit to justify the extra complexity. I think that teaching rationality means teaching people two things. First, one should practice excellent evidence-gathering practices as time goes by, which implies their understanding how their evidence is seldom exhaustive, and thus on many questions seeking more evidence would improve the grade of one's knowledge. Second, at each point in time one should believe whatever one's evidence implies via proper, i.e. perfect, reasoning from that evidence, the nature of which we will explore in response to KQ2. If it turns out that for much of what the basic view calls knowledge, the reasoning of the subject person or the observer is unavoidably imperfect, then epistemologists would have to try to make room in the analysis of knowledge for this by speaking of grades of reasoning quality. But I will leave that question outside the scope of this project. With that stated, let's finally pop our head out of the ground and look around to see what will come next. 10.7 The outstanding mysteries hidden in our analysis of knowledge. If my reasoning in this book is correct, we have an analysis of knowledge that passes all the tests required to make it the answer to KQ1. If that is the case, we have an analysis of knowledge that aligns with the basic view of knowledge, and in fact seems to set us up well to defend knowledge against the skeptics and the relativists about knowledge, pending the answers to KQ2 and KQ5 I have promised. At this point, we have an understanding of how to analyze knowledge into conditions and to use those conditions to determine when someone knows a proposition. We also know that knowledge attributions have a grade, and that our new formula can be applied not only to third-person knowledge attribution, but also to first-person knowledge attribution. Do we now fully understand the nature of knowledge? Have a look at the conditions for attributing knowledge shown both in the third-person and the first-person versions of the no unacceptable element theory. The four concepts left here that we have not yet fully explained are the concepts of belief and justification mentioned in four of the conditions, and of truth and social knowledge building, mentioned in the last condition. For our purposes in our quest to understand knowledge for everyday use, I consider belief to not be sufficiently mysterious or interesting to warrant focused attention. Believing things is easy, and we have a good intuitive sense of what it is to believe a proposition, and when it is that we believe a proposition. At most, I may mention a question or two about it while addressing other issues. In contrast, I consider the other three concepts to require further exploration if we are to fully understand how to apply our new analysis of knowledge in real life. Assuming I am able to write the next book in this series, Book 2 will begin by further exploring the nature of truth, since this is essential to understanding the other two. With regard to the concept of justification, I have defined it with reference to truth, saying it is about someone being justified in believing that P is true. Truth is the ideal toward which justification strives. And the concept of social knowledge-building institutions is deployed in the last condition to explain how an observer can ensure that her evidence is truth-conducive. So, again, truth is the ideal for social knowledge-building institutions. So it seems to me that we should first explain the concept of truth, the ideal toward which they both strive. Since our definition of truth stated earlier deployed the concept of reality, this means especially that we will have to analyze the concept of reality. After discussing truth and reality, and still within Book 2, I plan to turn my attention to the nature of justification, and thus to seek to answer KQ2. As said earlier, I will use an evidentialist theory of justification, that is, one that relies upon the concept of evidence. Thus, in the course of exploring the nature of justification, I will have to explain the concept of evidence. And more specifically, within the evidentialist perspective, mine will be a foundationalist theory. Foundationalist theories state that there is a way for a belief to be justified without appealing to any other belief. In other words, they assert the existence of justified basic beliefs. As such, I will have to explain from where justified basic beliefs derive their justification. I expect Book 2 to end once we have fully answered KQ2, and thus have completed our theory of justification. As I mentioned earlier, since epistemology has not arrived at anything like a consensus theory of justification, the theory I present will, in its final details, be another novel theory of my own. It is a theory I have developed in parallel with the analysis of knowledge in the present book. As with my analysis of knowledge, it seems to withstand the most difficult critiques and meet the most challenging demands I have been able to find or devise. As such, I am eager to fully articulate it and present it for public critique. After this will be Book 3, in which I plan to address social knowledge building, and thus to respond to KQ5. Book 3 will be where I cover the nature of good science and of good journalism. I expect this to be the last book needed to complete the series, so this is also the book in which I will address any of our knowledge questions that remain. If I succeed in realizing Book 2, I look forward to continuing our conversation there. If not, I simply hope that the present book has contributed somewhat to our little human knowledge-building endeavor concerning knowledge itself, known as epistemology.
And that completes our episode's reading from my 2019 book, Knowledge by Acceptance, Second Edition. I hope you found it interesting. For more information, including links to Amazon, from which you can buy the ebook or the paperback, see my website, jamesgraf.org, and that's Graf spelled G-R-A-F. All the best.